Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa here? I know him. I know him.
The following program is a podcast1.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Fragile. It must be Italian.
This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk Is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today's episode is being sponsored in part by Great Clips. At Great Clips, we want you to love your haircut. That's why we created Clip Notes. Notes that tell us what you like so you get your same great haircut every time, every place, everywhere. With Clip Notes, no matter what stylist cuts your hair, you'll get the haircut you want. You'll get the haircut you need, man. And speaking of need, you need the weekend. Well, it's Friday of Christmas weekend. So if you're stuck traveling, maybe this will help make your trip go a little easier. I'm talking about the power of music with Seth and Sammy right here on Talk Is Jericho. That's right, Seth Rollins and Sami Zayn. You're going to get to hear what it's really like when we're on the road. This is we did this podcast when we were in Europe somewhere sometime. This is how we pass the time in hotel rooms, long planes, bus rides, long plane rides. This is the kind of stuff we talk about, how long the conversations typically last. Rollins and Zayn and I talking about music. That's right, favorite bands, favorite concerts, first concerts, meeting our musical heroes, Metallica, The Beatles, grunge. Whether there'll ever be another movement like that in music that changes the culture, that becomes an actual lifestyle. It's a great debate and discussion about music, and we're going to do it. We're going to get to it. But first, Talk Is Jericho fans, I know you love to be the first to know what's up with this podcast, with this show, who the guests are going to be twice a week, when and where the next Talk Is Jericho live podcast is going to take place. That's why Podcast One has created a new automated email system to make sure you never miss a single episode or the information about each episode. All you got to do is go to podcastone.com/Jericho. To sign up, that's podcastone.com/Jericho. Then we'll take care of letting you know exactly when a new show is out, what it's all about, who the guest is, what the topics that we discuss are. It's podcastone.com/Jericho. Sign up now at podcastone.com/Jericho. Be a Talk Is Jericho. It's like the Talk Is Jericho fan club, all right? Join the Talk Is Jericho fan club. Get all the information at podcastone.com/Jericho. Go do it now.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
So we're in this tour here, it's like 10 shows in 10 days or something like that. So you sit around a lot and just talk about whatever. And the king of kind of random subjects coming up is Sami Zayn. And you had a great one today that spurred us to meet up here with Seth Rollins and myself, just talking about music, basically.
Yeah,
I'm not sure exactly how it started, but all three of us are really musically influenced. Music is a big part of all three of our lives, and a lot of guys on the roster aren't like that, you know?
Or they are, but in the I probably shouldn't say anything.
No, you can say it. Like,
I was going to say, at the first start of this tour, you were on the B-Bus.
Yes.
So, B would be babyface.
Yeah, so there's the good guys and bad guys don't travel together, and well, there was a lot of music playing.
Yes.
But, you know, we just didn't have a whole lot of personal space on this tour. It's been very, very busy. We've had a flight every day and a show every day. And it's not my music. You know, and I feel like it was the same songs over and over. And it was just starting to get to me.
That's typically how it goes.
So I feel like a lot of these guys are, I mean, they like to have music on, but I don't feel like they're musically inclined in the same regard. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I think here's the difference.
Like, they like having it in the background, and it's the same 10 songs, but they just like kind of having it in the background.
I don't think it has had an impact on their lives.
Right, and I'll tell you the reason why the difference, and here's the difference. It makes me mad and distracts me when it's not my music, like you said,
yes.
Right? Like, other people could just have whatever.
Well, it's definitely more tolerable.
Yeah, if it's something, like, I don't like certain type of music to be talking to or to be drinking to. And when it's playing in the background, it distracts me.
Yeah.
And I don't like it.
You're mad, yeah.
I'm so into it. From like, you know, like, for example, yesterday was my birthday, and they're like, what do you want to listen to when we're driving back from the arena? And it's like, if it's drinking and it's party, it's AC/DC, it's Guns N' Roses, it's Skynyrd.
It's all the classics.
It's that sort of stuff. That's party music.
But if it's not playing, I can't get really into it.
Well, that's our party music.
Right. Yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, the party music for these other guys is just stuff that I would never in a million years party to.
Pitbull.
Or, yeah.
I like this weird, like the Colognes always playing this Drake. Weird kind of like, I think it's Puerto Rican reggae or something.
Reggaeton.
Reggaeton, yeah. And then you get, then they're playing Frank Sinatra, My Way. Hey, it's nothing it's against Frank. Mix. Love yes, Frank, yes. But I'm not wanting to hear My Way for drinking some beers.
Unless you're hanging out with Pat Patterson.
Well, then that case, well, Pat will sing it, and then you got it, right? But what was your original question?
Okay, so I have no idea what made me think of it.
He was just eating a plate. He was just eating a plate. He was eating some pasta, some pumpkin and spinach pasta.
Oh my God, that cannelloni.
It was very good. And
which
he,
I regret.
And he turns to me. He's like, hey, I've got a question for you. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah, the, you know what it is? Here's what it is. Well, this is what
sparked it.
This is what sparked it.
I'm curious.
Me and Neville were talking some political stuff, and which is a dangerous subject right now, mm-hmm. especially these last couple of days. But we're on the same page, so we were just kind of venting with each other. You know, we're very like-minded, and I think a lot of the views that we have are very, they're also shared by the kind of music we like. He likes a lot of reggae, and I like a lot of punk rock, and he likes a little bit of both too, and I like a little bit of both too, but both those music are very anti-establishment, and when you really chisel away at it, there's a lot of talk of like unity and uniting and against the man, and the man's oppressing us, and all this stuff. So it became a question to me, and I was just about to ask Neville, but he got up and he was first or second match. So I wanted to ask him, hey, do you think we are the way we are because the music we listen to is kind of politically charged? And because we took a liking to this music, you know, it affected our opinion on politics, mm-hmm. or not just politics, but humanity.
Right.
Or were we drawn to this music because we were innately rebellious or, you know, anti-establishment, so or sticking it to the man.
Chicken and the egg.
Exactly. Ultimately, it boils down to chicken and the
exactly
egg.
Exactly what he said. Chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
However, Neville walked away. So Seth here is just eating his food, and I just turn to him and I say, chicken or the egg situation here. All right, let's talk about this for 1 second. Quick question.
I wasn't involved in the
initial.
He wasn't there for the thought process.
I saw none of it. I was just minding my business. But, didn't even hear the political.
But when you hang out with Rami, there's really never something that sparks it. You just come up with these thoughts. So it's very obvious that you would ask this question because that's how you are.
They're usually based on something. But that thing isn't always apparent. Yes,
we don't hear that.
It's not always apparent to you.
Because then I was two tables over and I heard this thing.
That's what I love about Chris.
Yeah.
He just heard something. He's like, I want to be a part of that.
Because
grabbed his food and just sat down and joined
because
us.
It was music, right?
Yeah.
Music.
I saw him coming and I knew he had his plate. I'm like, oh, he heard us talking about music. He's coming to this.
So that ended up sparking a 30-40 minute discussion.
I wanted to pretend that we didn't have that discussion because I think it was very interesting and
we only scratched the surface,
we
really.
Did. So you're under the opinion that the music made you who you are?
I really don't know. I still haven't really come to a conclusion on this. Because, well, I just don't know. I don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'd like to discuss it with you and see what you guys think. I don't know.
I'm of the opinion that we are innately, we have a certain, whatever it is, predisposition to be rebellious, to be
that. And
that
we will be then drawn to that music.
And you identify then with the music you hear as you hear it.
But then there's so many variables because almost all genres of music in some capacity have like an element of rebellion to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even rap or hip hop or I don't know, even the kind of music that I really don't like, which is like this hip hop that really glamorizes materialism and I'm so cool and popping bottles with all this money and all these girls, you know, and all that stuff. That's not my message at all. But even that is very rebellious to some people. So another factor that plays into this is also your upbringing, because then you brought up when you were growing up and you were falling in love with music.
It was about the, when I was first, to me, what I adapted so much to rock and roll, heavy metal was the aggression.
Right.
Not so much the rebelliousness, because I think as a teenager, we're all rebels to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But was I listening to Metallica and Smashing Windows? No, but I was listening to Metallica, which was an outlet for the aggression that I had as a young teenager.
But this is my point, is that it was cool back then. Mm-hmm. Metallica was the cool band of that time period. Now Drake or whoever is the cool artist.
Sure.
So I wonder if your environment it probably all contributes it. It's a bit of a nature nurture conversation as well here.
You tell me I would have listened to Drake?
If you grew up, let's say, I'm going to say this. If you weren't from Iowa, Davenport, and you were from, the Bronx, and you were 16 years old in 2016, maybe Drake would be your rebellious music.
Oh, that's terrifying.
That's what I'm saying. It all comes out. We are the way we are for a reason.
You're talking about the rebelliousness and the aggression. Now, rock and roll has always had a little bit of a dangerous side to it. That's why, like, okay, you go right back to Elvis. He was dangerous to parents. Like, when I had Alice Cooper on the show, he said that anything that parents don't like, the kids will like. And there was larger-than-life characters at that time frame. I think now rock and roll has kind of become a little nameless, faceless, literally in Slipknot's case. I think Avenged Sevenfold, the biggest rock band that's not Metallica, no one really even knows who's in the band. And I think as a result, the true characters, the rock stars, if you will, are the hip-hop guys, right? Jay-Z, Kanye, Beyonce, Rihanna.
Well, they're solo artists. Yeah. That's another factor.
Well, okay, right. But yeah, because there's no hip-hop bands. But I'm saying the large, like, okay, Guns N' Roses in 1987, Axl Rose.
New Axl Rose.
Slash. Yeah. You know,
even the Duff.
Van Halen.
Van Halen, Dave Lee Roth, exactly. You know, Kurt Cobain.
I mean, the one
Eddie Vedder,
guitar, like frontman and guitarist.
Sure, the classic.
They usually always kind of stick out.
Yeah, the classic Mick and Keith, Joe Perry and Steven Tyler.
But again, there's so many other variables at play, because another thing that I personally think is that in today's day and age, it's harder to become a star. Maybe, like, you can be an overnight nothing success. Like, I mean, YouTube, you could go on YouTube and get millions of followers or whatever, just go viral. But I think it's harder to sustain it and to become this, like, iconic,
the longevity of
and I think I had this conversation with Cass or something one time. We were riding together and I put on We Are the World with Michael Jackson and everybody, and it's a who's who of people that to this day, every one of these names is legendary. Yeah. And we started talking, will this anything like this ever happen again?
Yeah.
And if so, who's our generation?
But you know what's
we
funny
are the world?
Though is when they had the anniversary of Live Aid in 85, I think it was, so 2015, they did a remake of We Are the World with this generation, and nobody heard about it. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
Because it's been done before.
Yeah.
That was the first time, and not only was it the States, it was in Canada with Northern Lights.
Yeah.
And it was in England with Band Aid, and the England one was even bigger than the We Are the World in a lot of
ways. I guess it boils down to this. If Justin Timberlake and Kanye West and Drake and Justin Bieber and Christina Aguilera, she's, I guess, a couple years past, Lady Gaga, whoever. Right. You get all these people in one room and they record this song. Will it have the same impact as it did then? And will it stand the test of time like that one does? Will those artists stand the test of time like these artists do?
But you got to think about what was happening. I mean, you go back
different
time
and place.
Different time, what was happening.
Right.
You know, the whole process, how people consume their music and what was going on in the world. Like, that was an important song at that period of time. So if there was a subject that was that important and that impactful, I could say, even though the artists maybe not individually are as big, if they joined it together,
they could make just as big of an impact.
Yeah, they could make as big of an impact.
I think we touched on this earlier in the day, too, is the fact that that was the first time that had ever been done. Mm-hmm. Just like when we were talking about, like, the first time Metallica came out. Right. You had never heard anything that, like, now, like I said, you hear Metallica on the radio. You hear them at a hockey game. It's on commercials for, you know, Ford cars, fuels on there, whatever. But in 1983, 84, when I first heard them, you'd never heard anything like that before, right? Or we mentioned Eddie Van Halen in 78. You'd never heard a guitar player like that. And in 85, We Were the World. You had never seen all of these stars together.
Yeah.
So I think a question would be, in 2016 and 17, what can be done that's never been done before?
So I think what we had decided when we talked, right, was nothing, right?
I feel like there's not.
I don't think. I think it's.
It's so hard.
I think the world's just different now.
It's a different world. The information travels so fast that people know stuff's done before it even happens.
Like, will there be an artist that just comes out of left field and it's a sound you've never heard before and it takes the world by storm?
Sure. Like, is there someone
What's the closest thing that's happened to that?
Is there someone that's going to pick up a guitar and
do something that's never been
done? And make Eddie Van Halen sound like, you know, like...
primitive.
Yeah, primitive. Yeah. Like Eddie did for, you know, Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck and those guys. Is that even possible? Will there be a guy that grows a sixth finger as a mutant?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what
you know what I mean?
What else you
can happen as a human being?
Because I feel like at this point, it's sort of all offshoots of things that we already have. It's like very small... You know, you listen to hip-hop, for example, and I constantly kind of make fun of it, and I maybe shouldn't, but... you listen to Drake or whoever now, and it's like it's so unrecognizable from the hip hop that I was listening to in 2000 or the hip hop that was coming out in the late 80s, early 90s, and all that stuff. But it's all within that same realm, but it's just so different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like a whole new sound, it's an evolution of the same sound.
Yeah, well, punk rock's the same way.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean,
sure.
In the market, metal's the same way. You have,
yeah,
you know,
good point.
You should just be metal. I don't know where I was going with that. Now there's subgenres, so
yeah.
many, right?
So many, right,
of
right,
them, and
right.
They're all, you know, to the naked ear that you have never. If you listen to hip hop and all of a sudden I play you metal, you know, and then I play you thrash metal, then I play right. you black metal, I play you death metal. So that person who likes hip hop, they're just hearing the same thing.
Right, hearing fast beats yeah, and screaming.
Like, oh,
so are we yeah. asking here, will a new genre emerge? Because, like, I mean, dubstep sort of came out of nowhere, but it's already kind of faded.
Let me take it one step further. Let's go back to the 50s when...
Yeah.
Now everything is so available at the touch of a finger.
Yes.
And we know everything that's going on worldwide. If you go to the 50s when Elvis came out, suddenly everyone's got the ducktail, greased back hair.
Yeah.
And the Beatles come out. Beatles changed the entire society.
Oh, yeah.
If the Beatles put their hair in the mop top, everyone did it.
Yep. Yeah.
If the Beatles went to India to study transcendental meditation,
yeah, yeah.
the world did it. If the Beatles started saying we're taking LSD, the world did it.
Yep.
Now let's move forward to, you know, the heavy metal years where you're talking about, like, even if it's Van Halen or those type of bands where suddenly you're wearing your hair is bigger.
Yep.
And then even the makeup.
Androgynous,
you know,
becomes big.
And then you get to Cobain and Nirvana, where the whole system, everyone was wearing flannel,
yeah.
long johns with shorts over the top.
Yeah.
Like, you watch that movie Singles, everybody I knew in 1993 dressed like those guys, yeah. like Matt Dillon. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Wayne's World's one of my favorite movies,
yeah.
but it's so a product of that time. And if you didn't live it,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
it's kind know. Of, yeah, you don't know. You,
it's almost you like know? You think it's something that was written, but it was real.
Yeah.
But here's my next point, though. After Nirvana kind of changed the whole cultural landscape, who came afterwards? It seemed like that's when things started fragmenting, when the world started opening up.
Well, that was right when it happened. That was the mid-90s.
Mid-90s.
Was so right. Yeah. Punk rock exploded again after Nirvana.
Yeah, okay.
94, punk exploded.
But did it change the cultural zeitgeist the way that Nirvana did, or the way that the Beatles did, or the way that, you know, we're talking about, whichever band you want to say, kind of the glam thing started, where a whole fashion... And a way of life came out of this band.
No, there was nothing after
really
that.
Nothing,
I
right?
think they were the last punk ones that really changed.
Alternative. I mean, there's like the new metal, you know, those new metal bands in 2099. I mean,
yeah,
everyone is wearing baggy jeans.
That's
and
true.
Getting like their, you know, upper ear part pierced,
sure,
or
sure,
whatever.
Sure. Yeah,
dreadlocks.
You know, everybody dressed like the singer from Stained or whatever band, you know.
Fred Durst with the
backwards hat. Fred Durst.
True, with the baseball cap.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
a good point.
It just,
very
I don't know
actually,
if this
rock,
is just because...
Yeah.
Maybe I have I'm romanticizing the things that came before my lifetime, but to me it just didn't feel as important. Mm. It felt very flash by night. Like, it's such a short. We remember the new metal period, and we're like, remember new metal? God, had a 2-year run. It got huge, but ultimately it's a 2-year run. It's a, you know, two tears in a bucket sort of a thing. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's a blip.
Yeah. It was a blip.
It's a flash in the pan of musical history.
Yes,
yeah.
yes. But these other things were movements.
Sure. Like
punk rock was a movement. The Beatles, it was a movement.
Punk rock, absolutely.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if there's been a maybe...
I think
we're just not connected to it, but I think this EDM thing that's going on right
yeah,
now
sure.
is a bit of a
movement.
Kind of maybe. I'm just so out of touch that
funny.
I can't.
I was in, you guys know Jamie Iovine, right?
Yeah.
And you know Steve from the Hard Rock? He's another, yep. yeah. So I was there, we had a show there this summer. And I hung out with them, and then they were going to the Electric Daisy Carnival, which is an EDM all-night thing.
Yeah.
And they were wearing just normal clothes, and then they went and changed into their EDM clothes,
yeah.
which is skinny jean shorts, a tank top, flip-flops, and like some kind of a you know, bucket hat.
Yeah, yeah.
But they both look exactly the same. Look at you two, and James probably listened to it. Look at you two, like, idiots. Look at these. Yeah. Well, this is what everyone wears, man. But that was the uniform.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in 1987, when we went to Maiden College, you put on super tight jeans, yeah. high tops that went over top, you know, a leather jacket and a rock shirt. Like, that's just what everybody wore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The EDM's kind of
we're
big
guys. I we just have to come face to face with the fact that we're not cool hip young kids anymore.
That's fair.
You know, like, I'm not connected to
But I
hip,
think it
cool
goes back
music.
To what Seth said. If we were young kids and cool, would that
right.
make us
maybe
EDM fans or
yeah.
hip-hop fans?
Because maybe EDM, I mean, as stupid as I may think it is, and, you know, whatever, it might be the rebel music for a 16-year-old kid now, and it might be like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
I don't
very,
know.
It very well might be the rebellious thing.
Because, like I said, there still are some great rock and roll bands. I always focus on, like, Slipknot and Avenged Sevenfold and those bands, but it's still not like, hey, Axl Rose and Guns N' Roses.
Right.
M Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold. You couldn't pick him out of a lineup.
Yeah, dude, and I couldn't tell you. I mean,
who the guitar player?
Yeah, yeah. And Skrillex doesn't qualify, I don't think, because he was part of the dubstep thing. But I know zero EDM people. Like, I know nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One person that's transcended,
right?
Right. That's come out of the movement and been a mainstream. Yeah.
But like, and that's like, it's not a movement. It's not a culture. Maybe it is a culture.
But you're talking about. Like, there's a great video online of you rocking out at Parkway Drive.
Yes.
But, and just like Bring Me the Horizon played yeah. O2 the night after we did. I could not tell you anybody in any one of those bands, and yeah. I know some of their songs, but I don't know any faces. There's no danger there, right?
See, that goes back to what we were saying earlier, though, about stars emerging from that time period. There was so much less accessible to start. I think we've had this conversation before about how Twitter makes us so accessible. We're so accessible to our fans now. And just things seemed larger than life because content wasn't as available.
There was less, much
less. And of course, eventually, I knew this conversation would splinter back to wrestling somehow, but it's the same with wrestling now where there's just so much content that maybe, I could be wrong here, but maybe it's just not as special to see us as it used to be. Because they can see so much of us all the time.
I agree with music. Like, for example, I remember
oversaturation.
If you wanted to hear a song,
business, you know,
even back, you know, in the '80s, when you have a tape recorder, when you listen to the radio, and you would press record, like, I hope they play, you know, the new Ozzy song. Yeah. Oh, they're playing it. You run over there, and the DJ's talking. You hit it. Always miss the first three or four bars.
And then, you know, it's funny because you memorize that song from that tape recording, and so when you hear that song now, you still remember what the DJ said at the beginning of the song. Yeah,
100%.
I waited 6 months to get Life as a Highway. I would call the radio Tom station. Cochran, yeah, Mix 96, Montreal. Can you please Tom Cochran, Life as a Highway?
And that's the thing, because if you want Life as a Highway, but it was on an album where you didn't know any of the songs, you had to pay $15. Right. It's a lot of money for one tune, right?
Especially when you're 10.
For sure. And now we can just go online. I can look up the most obscure Ozzy song. You know, it was played once in Bulgaria in 1992.
Somehow the footage is up there on YouTube.
Yeah, everywhere.
Got it.
How?
It's there. Everywhere.
So like you said, I think a little bit of the mystique and the, because you had to work hard to get this stuff. You had to really, you know, find the import record shops or find guys that could hook you up with these things.
Figure it out for you. Yeah.
And I think now it's like you just go. It's the same thing with pictures. When I was a kid, and I went to try and see a band.
Just talking about this on the bus too.
I would have to commit.
Tangible pictures.
I would grab a camera. I would grab film. I'd have to have a flash, and I'd have to be waiting.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh my God, can I take a picture with you? I'm not even sure who you are. Here's my phone.
Click, click, click.
Yeah.
Six of them in 5 seconds. So all gonna be the same.
And there's still some guys that still haven't figured out how to use their phone, and you stand there with that smile on your face. Like, guys, come on, please.
I just had it.
Oh, man, you're filming yourself. Turn it around.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just very nervous.
You don't do a low selfie. Yeah. Never do that. That should be a Seinfeld. Never do the low selfie. Yeah. You gotta do the high selfie. So we're talking about music. So what was your guys' first experience or band that kind of connected you and made you realize that you were really into the vibe of music? Seth?
For me, it was Metallica. My brother introduced me to Metallica. Man, I grew up listening. My mom was big into Michael Jackson. My dad kind of like 80s rock and 70s rock. So like Pink Floyd was big for him. Van Halen, Thin Lizzy and stuff. So like I had kind of like a heavier side, but at least a rock side.
You had your foundation.
Yeah, and then my mom, you know, Michael Jackson, Paul Abdul, that whole stuff. But I was basically like until probably like middle school, I was pretty much listening to whatever was on the radio. You know what I mean? So up until like the boy band era, I was like, okay, NSYNC, woohoo. But then my brother played Injustice for All. That was like the first Metallica record that I
heard. How old were you at this point?
Man, I had to have been, maybe 12, 13 years old, like right going into middle school somewhere around that time period. And it just, I was blown away. Like, it had the melodies that my pop music had, but it also had this, like, guttural aggression, passion. And not that Michael Jackson, because I still love Michael Jackson.
Oh, gosh, Michael's got passion.
He's got passion, but it was just a different...
Balls.
It was a different thing.
And plus, on that record, there's some pretty intricate playing as well, so you're kind of hearing almost prog rock, because there's 9-10-minute songs on it.
It's attitude. It's not passion, it's attitude.
Great call.
It was totally different than anything I had ever experienced before. You know, I listened to the classic rock. Like, I was fine with that. And even the modern rock from the 90s, you look at Nirvana, you look at the Foo Fighters, you look at some of those earlier bands and stuff like that. Gin Blossoms, kind of what was Goo Goo Dolls, what was pop rock at that time. But dude, this was on another level.
Right.
Another level. Just unbelievable to me. So, I mean, you know, I heard Sabbath and stuff like that, but this was just special.
Metallica's different.
I just want
to
say,
it was the first band that I fully attached myself to. It was like, these are my dudes.
Yeah.
And they've been my dudes for 20 years. Right. You know? So, like, that's pretty crazy.
And this, you kind of got to give it up for Metallica because You have the same experience with Metallica.
Well, that's why I love hearing this story.
That,
right,
because you know, more, 15 years
it doesn't matter
that.
What age you are, you come to this realization that this band is different from all others. And Metallica is the Beatles of their generation.
Every kid has had a Metallica phase.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. And my phase was only, it was at the beginning of their career.
Yeah.
I told the story earlier about going to Bigelow's convenience store down the street from my house. There's this little kind of a little Jedi type Yoda guy. His name was Brad Hudubiak. Great Winnipeg name.
Great Canadian name.
And I remember he had zits all over his face, and he was just a little guy, but he would sit there on the front step of the convenience store, like on one of the one of the curbs, and you would just go to Brad and you would ask him for his wisdom, who's the band I should check out, and he had all these, he knew everything about metal.
See, Brad doesn't exist anymore.
It's
the internet.
Brad was my internet.
Everyone had a kid.
Yeah.
So I had Angelo DeCori. I told you his dad was a DJ, and somehow this kid was way ahead of his time. I don't understand. He had his finger on the pulse. He was way ahead.
Like, how did he know?
Well, I don't know. Because so, for example, Green Day kind of started exploding. He's like, wow, punk. And I don't know. So you find my theory is that, you know, you find the music magazine where Green Day's on the cover, and you open it up and you start reading about Green Day, and then they're talking about
Rancid.
And
you find other bands.
About Operation Ivy. And then, you know, I think I was telling you this before, but growing up in Canada, I think it was the same for you. But back then, 90s, you just go to HMV with a bunch of CDs and say, oh, I got these as a birthday gift. I don't like them. And they just let you take five new ones.
They would take used CDs and exchange them for new ones.
CD burners didn't exist back then.
No wonder the whole chain went out of business.
Right.
Just straight exchange then?
Yeah,
HMV's not out of business.
What? Pretty close. Does it still exist?
I don't know if they
I didn't mean to burst your bubble there, my man. You almost started crying. They are not out of business. Yeah, you basically take a CD in there you should have bought it from HMV.
Oh.
And then when you don't want it, you
need a receipt because you weren't asking for money back. You were just exchanging it. Yeah.
And they just gave you
brand new
CDs.
Yes, it was insane.
Yeah, my goodness. So you just have endless amounts of free music.
Endless amounts. Yeah, it was the original Napster. Yeah.
Spotify for like.
Right.
I mean, you have to be a little carny though.
Let me just tell the end of the Brad Hudubiak story about Metallica, because he was like, he would get all the fanzines from Europe, Metal Hammer and Aardshock magazine. Remember, I always loved Aardshock. It was from like Denmark or something. And he would go through and then find the albums and then the bands. So he said, you got to try this band, Metallica. And I remember
he
showed
just tell me what your friend said. Remember when you?
Yeah, he showed us the ad, and he goes, "Was it Metallica?"
Yeah,
and we're like, "That's a stupid name."
Stupid name.
And that's when you laugh. You think back about that, like it really is. Like people sometimes go, "Fozzy, that's a dumb name." But if you think about Metallica, or Kiss, like if my band was Hug, the 2 G's, or Def Leppard, terrible, right?
They're all terrible.
So he's like, "You got to check out the Metallica." So I went to the store, and you would go through the record bin, and you go like, you know, A, B, C, D, and with your fingers. And then you get to the M and pull it up, and it's this Ride the Lightning with this big blue album cover, which looks cool. Sick. And then you turn it over in the back, and there's these four ugly skids with like really bad hair. And I remember Lars and Cliff had the bad teenage mustache, and they got zits. And I realized these guys look like me. I love these guys already. So then I took them to my house, and I put them on. My parents had this big, giant, old school 70s record player that was more like a piece of furniture.
Yes.
Right.
I tried to buy one of those recently.
Did you? I would love to have one of those.
Yeah, I went on Craigslist.
You tried to buy the full size.
The cabinets. Like it's old 50s cabinet. Furniture, kind of.
Yeah.
60s
it's
furniture.
70s, right?
It's a cabinet, and then you pull up the deal, and there's the record player.
And the speakers are built in.
Yeah, they're built in.
So then you put it on, and of course, Fight Fire with Fire is the first song, but it's almost like I thought he was joking. Because it starts off with that harpsichord thing, and like, this sucks, you know. And then, and just kicks off. And dude, I felt like I had just taken a line of cocaine. I didn't know what cocaine was, but if I would have, it would have been that.
So let me ask you this:
so fast and so powerful and so different, like you said, Seth.
So
never heard anything like this before.
Is this a life-defining moment for
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. There's been a couple with bands, but Metallica, absolutely. By far, life-defining moment. I think the other two where I had the same charge was Kiss, discovering Kiss. And I discovered Kiss in the 80s, going back to the 70s. And then the original Beatles, I think.
Yeah.
And I think Iron Maiden, to an extent. Those are my four favorite bands. To this day, I still have that feeling when I hear their stuff.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color?
Talk is Jericho.
Talking music with Sami Zayn and Seth Rollins. So how about you guys? What's your first experience with any band?
Okay, well, the year was 1992.
Oh, yeah. But let me just so we know, we're all on the same page, but we're different. I'm 46. How old are you?
32.
And you're
30.
So you guys are like a generation beforehand.
Yes. Yeah.
But still, I like hearing this because it's the same, vibe, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, right. So it's just that feeling of being excited.
92.
Actually, here's the thing. So I didn't grow up in a musical family at all. I pretty much never heard music, I think, until so I knew the first song I think I remember hearing is Bon Jovi, Bad Medicine, when I'm 4 or 5 years old.
Okay, yeah.
Still has a very soft spot in my heart.
That's a great song. It's a great tune. Absolutely.
That's a great song.
Damn right it is.
Underrated.
Absolutely.
Underrated Bon Jovi song. And Pump Up the Jam. Those are the only two songs I remember from age five. Pump Up the Jam. Because I remember for some reason, I don't know why this is tattooed in my head, but so we're Arabs and my family, we're Arabs.
Just say we're Arabs. And, you know.
And so there was some Arab kid in the neighborhood named Anwar. And he comes in, we're listening to the song, and he's pointing to my two older brothers. And they're like, listen, they say my name here. When she goes, I want a place to stay. He goes, Anwar, a place to stay. To this day, I remember that. I don't know why that's burnt into my brain.
Wait. Was he dead serious? 100%.
You know what? Come on. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You know when you're a kid and you're like, listen, they say my name here. I remember my friend Justin Sanchez, same thing. We're listening to Beds Are Burning. And he's convinced that they say, I don't remember what part of it, Justin My Way or something like that. It's like, Justin. So, you know, you're
but
like,
Anwar's like,
Anwar, a place to stay. I don't know why, but I just never forgot that.
Oh, that's the highlight so far.
Yeah. Really, that's like age 4 or 5. I'm young. My brothers are 5 years older than me. I'm, you know, just whatever.
See, but this is interesting to me. You come from an Arab family, which you think of like of the history of the world. Rock and roll not part of the Arab culture in any way, shape, or form.
I mean, if you really want to dig deep, that becomes a part of my life later on about my mother saying, this is, you can't listen to this.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. Like, this is all, come on. Devil's music. Yeah.
Well, I've got a great story to tell you as well about how Arab music, would it be Middle Eastern music?
Arabic. Yeah.
Influenced the entire sound of the Police.
Oh.
Because when Stuart Copeland was a kid, his dad was in the CIA and they were stationed in Iraq, something like this. And he grew up walking the streets where all the percussionists were there with like
my mom played
the tablas and all that stuff.
With her hand there.
And he says you can hear a lot of that in the Police, kind of the weird,
but
that stems not from reggae, it stems from Arabian music.
That's Arab music.
Yeah, it is interesting, right?
Very interesting.
That is all part of what we're talking about.
Yeah, and so maybe my parents would play occasionally, like, I don't know, Kalsum or some stuff I wasn't interested in. But so the year's 1992. I'm 7 years old. We just moved from Montreal to this other suburb, Laval. And I discover a radio, like a little boombox. And it's pretty much, it's collecting dust. It's in a closet. And I plug it in and I start fiddling with the knobs. And I pretty much just discover music. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Now I've discovered music, age 7.
Yeah.
You know? And so I remember, I have no idea what this song is. But now with today's technology, I'm sure I could find it just by Googling the lyrics.
Someone will tweet it to us.
It was a pop song, and it went, so pure, you're touching me. So pure, you're touching me. Do you remember that song?
No.
1992, some hit. And I remember the Gazette. I would always go. We got the paper, the Montreal Gazette. I'd always turn to the back of the Arts and Life. And in the top right corner, they had the top 20 songs or whatever. Like, oh, these are the songs. I got to, like, wow, Ill Communication's been number one for 6 weeks, you know?
Yeah, Beastie Boys, yeah.
Yeah, so... sorry, I'm rambling here, but basically that was when I just became obsessed with music, and I would tape these.
Was there
just
a
like
certain
you said.
Band that you connected with?
That early, I can't think of it. It was all my tapes were labeled various artists, which is I only knew that from the Gazette.
I knew that.
Various artists. I mean, I was yeah. You don't know what those
and just so you guys
made.
Understand, this was like a early version of a Spotify playlist.
Yes,
where you would take a cassette and put the songs on them, and hoping that the cassette wouldn't run out in the middle of your song.
Saturday,
right? I almost got all the way through and it died.
Saturday, if I I wasn't at Arabic school, which I always was, drove me nuts. But, you know, I'd listen to the top 20 at 4 p.m. Oh, top 20, you know, and I would tape those songs. Those are the songs in the Gazette. And so that was kind of how I got into music. And then, you know, again, a couple of years pass and now Green Day explodes.
You keep mentioning them. Is that one of your bands? When
not me, okay. But again, Angelo DeCori, who was Brad way ahead of the time.
Yeah.
Terrible influence, by the way, when I think back on it. But anyways, but this kid, because his dad was a DJ and we were close friends, I'd spend so much time at his house, had access to basically whatever Spotify was then. I mean, books and books of CDs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like an unlimited supply of music. And but he just, I don't know how he did it, but he just knew about all these bands and like Screeching Weasel and all these punk bands that, because he heard Green Day opened the door, and that opened the door to punk. For a lot of kids, you know, have the same story.
Were you a punk guy too, Seth? Or were you more of a, more of a metal guy then?
Yeah, as a kid, I was almost strictly metal. Like,
who else besides Metallica were you into?
Pantera was the second one. They were the natural transition for me. And then I really got into like, kind of like the new wave of American metal in the early 2000s, like Shadows Fall, mm-hmm. God Forbid, Lamb of God, and Killswitch
Engage. Yeah.
They kind of had, because I mean, there was really not a whole lot of metal going on in the 90s, like Metallica, Slayer,
Pantera saved the day, basically. They were the only happening band.
Yeah, they did Vulgar, they did Far Beyond Driven, and then they did Reinventing the Steel in the 90s, and Trendkill too, Greatest Trendkill. But there was really nothing that was mm-hmm. happening. Metallica had stopped making records after the Black Album. They weren't doing anything.
Well, and then they kind of went more of a hard rock groove style.
Yeah, when they came back.
Cut their hair, and it was more of the Load stuff. Yeah,
Load and Reload were, you know, they were a different band at that point.
As a Metallica fanatic, I was really disappointed.
Oh, dude,
just like, oh my God.
You look back at the records now, they're very good.
Very good, but it wasn't what you wanted.
You were very, I remember being so confused.
Yeah.
Like, wait, what is happening? This is
I remember in Japan, there's a magazine called Burn Magazine. It's like a great heavy metal magazine, and it was like such a controversy that they had cut their hair and changed the music, and they had this big cover of the Burn Magazine, and it said Metallica with a new picture of them, and they had crossed out the metal and wrote rock over top of it.
They're
Rocktalica now.
So it was a Rocktalica. Yeah, so those were the bands that the ones I mentioned, Shadows Fall, Killswitch, they started playing thrash metal again. They mm-hmm. were the first bands that really started playing thrash metal, and I hadn't really listened to hardcore at that point yet either, but they were kind of mincing in a little bit of that sound, and so then you had basically the birth of metalcore in mainstream music, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. where you had like the big breakdowns, soaring, you know, melodies in the choruses and kind of the thrashy riffs and stuff like that. And that's like, to me, that's when I pretty much got obsessed with music, was about mm-hmm. that time, like the early 2000s. That's when I like couldn't get enough of it. And anything that anybody else was listening to, it sucked.
Yeah.
On the radio.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Yeah, dude. Anything, you know, your music is crap. These artists don't write their own song. This is all garbage. You need to listen to the real stuff.
Especially as like a metal guy, because when you're growing up, it's so stupid, because if you're either metal or you're not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're not metal, you're not my friend. And I remember in junior high school.
You don't strike me as a guy who was like that.
Oh, no, I was metal, heavy metal. Like, okay.
If you were like a classic rock guy, would you?
No,
like,
no, I was friends. Yeah. I was not that type of guy. But I was the representative for the Metal Allegiance of Winnipeg at my high school, which entailed me, junior high school, which meant I had to hand out buttons to people and say, be a part of the Metal Allegiance. And then I'd go downtown and give my $1.20 of how much money I spent on buttons. And that gave me the right to be the Metal Allegiance rep.
That's hilarious.
That's awesome.
But I was super into metal, and everybody at the time in junior high school was when Duran Duran was hot. Like, all the girls were in love with Duran Duran. Like, it was crazy to describe how over they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hated Duran Duran, even though now I love Duran Duran. They're awesome.
Great.
But they weren't metal.
Yeah.
So I even made a shirt. I took it. I took a white paintbrush, and I wrote "Death to Duran Duran" on a black T-shirt, and I wore it to school.
Yes.
Whoa!
And I love it.
I wonder why.
Just
I never
a
had
heel
any...
from day one. Yeah. You know?
Never had any dates.
Yeah.
And I remember I went to a party. It was in
February. You know what? Hey, that is a. That, you know, we're talking about life defining. That's pretty, that defines you.
Well,
and that defines the rebellion.
That's part
like
of the
everybody
rebellion,
and the attitude.
Everybody
right?
else does this. Well, I do this.
Right.
And I say, pwah.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
you and your
but that's
your
rock
stuff.
And roll.
That's rock and roll.
That's rock and roll.
Right.
And there was a party, like a junior high school party in February in Winnipeg, which is minus 30, 40, really cold. and they were playing some Duran Duran, and I walked upstairs the stairs. I popped out Duran Duran. I put in Metallica, Ride the Lightning, press play, that I had to record off the album, by the way, because I couldn't afford the set as an album guy. And you could hear like, bow, 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 bow. And this really big girl, her name was Shelly Demkew. No, Sheila Fletty was her name. I got it mixed up. She was a big, big corn eating mama.
Yeah.
She walked upstairs. She goes, "What are you doing?" She clicked out the tape and she threw it in the snow.
Oh.
She goes, "Go get your tape." And she pushed me out the door. And I remember looking through the snow, like freezing. But where's my Metallica tape? I got my Metallica tape. And that's, so that's just the stuff that I was doing. It's metal, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess that was the commitment.
That's you know it. You had to have that.
You had to have that.
I couldn't casually listen to it.
I feel like
you
now
had
is
to believe you. Yes. You were part of that, man.
Absolutely.
It was special. It was like it was very. I was elitist about it to an extent. Like it was very mean,
like almost snobby about it.
Yeah, very much so, man.
Yeah, I'm looking. Okay. I'm sorry.
I was rubbing his chest like having a heart attack or something.
Like a sigh. He's like rubbing his chest over here.
Because I'm trying to think. I don't think I was ever. No, I was. I'm judgmental. I'm sorry. But I try not to be.
The reason I thought about it was like I was because when punk or emo music first started to burst onto the scene, it was the same time, early 2000s, and like Taking Back Sunday, I was like, no, these guys are can't listen to this crap. He's not. This is
wimpy.
Especially because they're getting over.
And they're getting popular. It's like Duran Duran. The girls love him.
Right.
His hair and his tight jeans. Yeah. And I'm like, screw this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Loser. Now they're like one of my. I love them. They're fantastic. They make great rock music.
Because
like,
now you can appreciate them for what they are, being just a great band, like you said. But at the time, because they weren't metal, nothing else mattered.
It didn't matter. You know, literally didn't matter. All that mattered was metal music. Let's rock and roll.
And that's just funny because we're over here in Austria right now. And when I first came to Germany in 93, I lived in Hamburg for 6 weeks. I could not believe how heavy metal was a way of life here.
Yeah. Huge in Europe.
Right.
Dude, Europe and South America, they still love metal. They still love rock and roll.
Metal or die. And I'm talking in Germany, leather, like people just walking in leather pants, leather jackets, super long hair. This is 1993.
Yeah.
Grunge has taken over the rest of the world. Not in Germany. They still was like, you know, if you don't listen to heavy metal, you're fucking stupid, you know? And like, it's like that's, and to this day, when we come over and play here, you've never seen so many long haired people in one place than when you play clubs in Germany. They all look the same.
Yeah, I don't care.
They still got the leather jacket with the denim jacket over top. Yeah. The buttons, the badges. It never changed over here, dude. You know?
I feel like I never really, I don't know how you were, you either, actually. I'm curious to know about you guys, but I feel like I never, and this is a big part of my personality, but I never dove headfirst into any subculture. So even though I love punk rock music, I never, like, I don't dress like a punk. I'm not covered in tattoos. I remember, it's just what you said reminded me of that, because I was at this punk festival called Punk Rock Bowling a few years ago in Vegas. And I was wearing I had a Mr. Bungle t-shirt that was white. I love Mr. Bungle. Do you like him?
Crazy band,
I love Mike Patton. I think he's great.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing these ridiculous swim shorts that I bought in Hawaii from the ABC store, because I went to Hawaii and I didn't have swim shorts. I bought them for $20. And they're just pathetic. They have flowers all over them. And I'm just wearing these shorts and this t-shirt. And I look around and I realize I think I'm literally the only person without a tattoo or without, like, you know.
You just don't fit in.
I'm like, I love this. Love this, but I just don't dive headfirst into the subculture. So when you were metal and you guys were all about metal, did you dive in? Did you dress the part? Did you act
the
part?
Absolutely. You had to.
Yeah.
I was on, we went to, he said these things called a career symposium when I was in junior high school.
Sure, yeah.
Which basically meant, you would go and like, they had a bunch of different people.
Job fair.
Yeah. And you might want to do this when you grow up. And they had the local video show was called City Vision. And all the kids were lined up trying to get on TV because he was doing it live with the people, with the kids behind. And I was wearing my Iron Maiden Power Slave shirt. And he came to me. He goes, "Next video is Bryan Adams. Do you like Bryan Adams?" He said to me, and I went, "Yeah, he's all right." Like super, like, he's all right.
Yeah.
I never heard the end of that for about 6 months. "Oh, you like Bryan Adams, do you? He's not metal. How kind of a metalhead are you? You said Bryan, I didn't like him. You said he was okay." It's the same thing. Arguing about Bryan Adams because I said I thought he was okay.
Hey, I'm unashamed to say Bryan Adams rocks.
He's amazing.
He's incredible.
And he rocks.
He's incredible.
There's nothing to not like about Bryan. I actually thought Bryan Adams was okay at the time.
But back then, you're so in the culture.
Kind of
But I never bought into that. Like, "Oh, but you're punk and you listen to this." Like, right. yeah, I do. I'm not one track.
Me and my friends were so bad.
You're elitist, like, crazy, huh?
My brother, for example, huge metal guy. He got me into metal, Metallica, Pantera, everything I listened to. And then he went through an ICP phase.
Wow.
And I went through an ICP
phase.
Oh, my God. He never heard the
end of it. We ridicule. I still, to this day, ridicule him for it. And he still a little bit listens to it.
Yeah, it's all, that's the thing about ICP. They're always kind of there.
Yeah. Juggalo. I'm talking.
Yeah. Got the tattoo. The Hatchet Man.
No tattoos, but he had the sticker on his
arm. Yeah, 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 yeah.
The Gatherings. Like, he did the whole thing. And, like,
God bless them.
I couldn't believe me and my friends, all of us, and we had a little small group, and we were just like, what is wrong? He's changed.
Yeah.
What's wrong with him? We gotta have an intervention. We gotta talk. Something's not right, man. Like, we couldn't handle it. It was too much. Same thing, like when my buddy Derek started listening to, like,
what was his last name?
Aaron's.
Derek Aaron. Derek, I like Aaron. The whole name.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah,
I like the whole name.
Especially when you're from high school, because you get a lot of good names.
Derek Aaron.
Derek Aaron.
Especially
good.
In Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Derek Aaron's. Yeah, he started listening to, like, different, like, softer kind of music from time to time. And he was, he actually, like, my friend started a band. They played in, over the years, have played in tons of different metal bands and stuff like that. He's actually a very excellent, talented guitarist. But, like, you know, he's played local, awesome local metal shows or whatever. He never did anything about it. He's a great guitarist.
Yeah.
But he started, like, you know, after listening, experimenting to other music, and we all just were like, no, dude, you can't. It's not fast. It's not heavy.
You know what's so funny about that, too, because we had the same thing. But if you go in, Metallica's come up quite a bit, but if you delve into the history of Metallica with Cliff Burton, the bass player who died in 1986, obviously, yep. his favorite bands were Allman Brothers, REM, Skynyrd. He brought that to James Hetfield and taught him, this is a melody.
Yeah, this is.
This is how you sing harmony. This is how it works. Meanwhile, if some kid I knew was like, REM, but you that's not metal. Right, you're wimp. You wimp. Now knowing that Metallica was based around REM in a lot of ways.
You'll find that all your favorite bands.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
That you think, they would be embarrassed to admit. No, those are their influences.
Yeah, exactly.
All of them.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Who was the first rock star that you ever met?
Met, or like
someone that you admired.
Well, you've met everyone.
No, but I'm talking about when I was in high school.
Oh, got
like
you.
The first, like, I'll give you one. So, my friend had knew a girl that worked at the Westin, which is the big hotel in Winnipeg where all the rockers would stay.
Love a good Westin.
So the first, I got two. The first was Iron Maiden was staying, and we found out what floor they were on. And we just started knocking.
And now we complain about the fans that were waiting in the lobby. You went to the room.
Knocking on their doors.
Oh, my God.
I knock on the door. And Adrian Smith, who's one of the guitar players, is actually a good friend of mine now, 30 years later. He answered the door. He had a towel around his head. Like, he had just washed his hair, like a turban.
Like turban style.
Yes. And he opened the door. He's like, hello? I'm like, hey, can I take a picture with you? Or no, I said, can I have your autograph? Because he didn't take pictures then. His autograph was everything. Can I have your autograph? He's like, I just got out of the shower, mate. Can you maybe come back later? And I was like, okay. And he closed the door. I just stood there.
Where are you going to go?
Yeah, like he said, come back later. Well, how I pull Sammy's in. Well, how long is later? Is it later? Yeah, it's not later.
I'm sorry. Knock one more time. Sorry. Just to clarify, later, is that, are we talking 5 minutes later,
minutes
2 hours?
2 hours.
Time frame?
I don't know what
to do here.
And then finally the security guard came. I'm sure he went and called the security and they came and kicked us out. And then the other one was, we they can't kick us out if we actually have a room here. So Metallica, Justice for All tour. This is when, I'll tell the story. So we rented a room on their floor and just opened the door. Sooner or later, they're going to walk by.
Why?
Yeah.
And lo and behold, after a couple hours, here comes Hetfield.
A couple hours.
And this is when, dude, we sat there.
Just creeping.
We sat there.
Yeah, stakeout.
And this is when, like, he always seemed like he seemed like a big, tall, which he is, but not as much now. But then he was like tall,
godlike.
Crazy.
Godlike.
And he had a nose ring, and they went to this phase where they shaved the sides of their head.
That's right.
So when the hair was down, it was down, but they would put it up like in a ponytail in the back.
Yep.
And he just looked like this crazy, like blonde-haired, Indian crazy Mohawk guy. So
what year was that, like
89?
Oh.
So he's walking down the thing. We're like, James. And he's like, stops. He goes, hey, guys. We go, hey, come in and drink some beer. We got a six pack. That's literally what I said. We got a six pack. There's three of us now.
You're trying to talk in like his language.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, we have beer.
James probably drank three six packs before he got out of bed in the morning. Right. He's like, oh, that's okay, guys. I'll see you in a bit. Once again, he'll see us in a bit. He's got to be coming back. He never came back. But sure. I was like, James, can you come drink? We got a six pack, man.
You're trying to talk his language.
That
kills me.
Come hang out with us and we'll give you two beers. There you go.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking, like the first brushes with greatness with these guys. Did you ever hang around the hotel or
trying to
see anybody?
I would hang out after the shows sometimes, like kind of, you see the buses, so they're out of the trailers or whatever, so you kind of like hang out and like peek around and stuff like that. And I just remember getting, I want to say it was John Donis or Matt Bashan from Shadows Fall. They were playing a club gig in Clinton with Meshuggah, who was an fantastic
crazy band.
Crazy. I think Mushroomhead headlined, and I remember they were like
also crazy
lumped into that nu metal. So like I was like, no, we're not staying for those. But Shadows Fall and God Forbid opened, and I remember being a huge Shadows Fall fan at the time. Art of Balance had just come out, and I remember like waiting or kind of like, just hang out by the bus. Maybe we'll just see somebody. You know, who knows? We'll just see somebody and like walking by. And like, I can't remember if it was John or Matt, because they kind of look similar, just long dark hair. And like, they walked out, and I was just like, Oh my God.
He's real.
He's real. And like so polite and nice and awesome. And I was like, I remember thinking that was the first time I like kind of was like, oh, they're also regular people at the same time. Like, cause I had, you deify them to an extent.
I'm going
to
say this. I still do. And it's weird because I asked you this because you've met everyone. I'm saying like you've met Axl Rose, you've met Keith Richards. It doesn't get bigger than that.
Right.
You know, Bruce Dickinson, you told me all these crazy stories. So I asked you, I think, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, I said, do you still freak out for anyone?
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I still get very intimidated. Like
I'm intimidated, man. I'm like, I'm weird. And I told you,
shocker.
What's that supposed to mean? I have a new respect for our fans. Okay, actually, I'm either offended or I have new respect for them because they come up to me cool as a cucumber. Oh, hey, Sam, can I get a picture? You know,
like, Samuel.
Yeah. Hey, Sam, do you mind if I bother you for a quick picture? Cool. Hey, really like that match. See ya. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
They're really put together.
Yeah.
When I meet people, I just want to say I'm a guy. I don't want to be that guy. But, you know, I'm a huge fan and your music has really affected my life. I just have to tell you that. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, cool. You want to drink? No, I got to go.
Yeah.
I'm weird.
We get plenty of those too.
The first time I met Hetfield, other than they offered him two beers, was I basically started crying. Not while I was talking to him, but as soon as I said, you know, and once again, thank you for the music and all you've done.
I think you told me this.
And then as soon as he left, I started crying. I was 39 years old.
But you know what?
It was like six years ago.
That makes sense to me.
To be fair, I've never met Metallica. I've never seen them live. I've never met them.
Metallica live?
I've never seen them live.
Oh, dude, we're going.
Dude.
We're going to go.
I saw them. Oh, my God. I saw them in Vienna. That's
what?
Crazy.
Really?
Yeah, we're in Vienna now.
Right, oh, right, yeah.
That's why it's crazy. I can't believe it. I only saw them once.
So you've never seen them or
never
met them?
I've seen them live, never met them. And I would think I have so much reverence for them that I think I would be affected by that.
And James is one of those guys too. Like even now I've known him, like we've had conversations. I still get, I don't know where to start the conversation with a guy like that. Whereas other guys like Slash, like I talked to Slash for 5 hours about whatever. He's like us. He could be sitting here on this podcast. But there's certain guys, like you said, that you use the word deify.
Yeah, you do.
And it's like, that's one of those guys for me of like,
well, because
James
he affected
Hetfield.
Your life so.
Well, yeah. And also too, you know, just as a riff writer, we talked earlier about how can one man be responsible for so many great songs?
Incredible.
You know what I mean? Like this is one guy.
And
like Lars throws his stuff in there, but this is James.
Album,
you know,
it doesn't make sense.
So it's James Hetfield and Tony Iommi. Those are the two greatest riff writers in heavy metal history. Which one is better is up to you. Is your opinion?
Good taste. Yeah.
But to think how much, like we once again compared it to wrestling. Like how can we write a different match every night? And they're always good. It's very rare that any of the three of us have bad matches at this point in time.
You have to try real hard.
Right. Or else maybe you've just got 2 minutes on TV and you just can't do it. But I'm sure they might be sitting around. I doubt they're talking about us, but if they would, they might say the same. How can they do that? How can they write so many great matches
right.
time and time again, weekly?
Right.
You know?
Because if you think about it, there's only so many moves in the book. Yeah. You only have so many moves in your arsenal, but yet you can tell a completely different story and have a completely different match.
Every time.
With each other, with the same opponent.
If we wanted to challenge ourselves,
we could have a different match every night. Completely different, with a completely different story.
You can't do anything you did last night tonight.
That would be... We should do that sometime.
Let's do it tomorrow. Oh. Well, maybe.
We're so close to the end of the tour.
Yeah. Two shows left.
What was that?
Next tour, next. Yeah.
What was the first...
The whimper that just escaped out of me there.
What was the first concert you ever went to, Sammy?
Oh, Bon Jovi.
Nice.
Yeah, 19... No.
If you tell me the opening band, I'll tell you what year it was. Do you remember the opening band? Was it Skid Row?
No. Get this. It was Less Than Jake.
What?
How random is that?
Wow.
Yes. What? So weird.
So that's probably a strange 95 tour. Or so.
It, no, dude. No, it was 2000. I was their Crush tour.
Oh,
2000.
The Crush tour?
Crush. Remember that?
It's pretty good. It's My Life?
It's My Life. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's My Yeah. What was their other... One Wild Night. That was their opener. They opened
I love when bands do this, though, and I give them full credit. Like Bon Jovi, we got to stay contemporary. We're not going to take out, you know, Skid Row in 2002.
Yeah.
Let's take out Less Than Jake, you know?
That's crazy.
It's like, right. It's like Kiss on the reunion tour took out Smashing Pumpkins. It's kind of a weird mix, but I appreciate them trying to give new bands a chance.
I should say Bon Jovi was a huge... It's weird because I don't listen to him at all nowadays, but he was a huge part of my life. Probably the first band that I fell like in love with.
Really? Okay.
Bon Jovi. And then
what was the song, do you know?
Well, really it was when their greatest hits album came out in 94 with Always was a huge. And Bon Jovi, fun fact, Montreal is Bon Jovi country.
Wow.
Dude, there are some bands that are inexplicably godlike in Montreal. Bon Jovi's one of them, at least at that time. And here's one you wouldn't figure: Styx. But not just Styx, specifically Dennis DeYoung, the singer. It's weird, dude. He'll put on a concert, it'll sell out. He'll add five more nights and it'll all sell out. But when Styx comes to town, he plays with Dennis DeYoung with the Styx Orchestra.
Yeah.
Sells out. Styx comes to town, they can't sell the building. They're in love with him.
They love Dennis DeYoung.
Styx! It's so weird. Matchstick
Dennis DeYoung Styx.
Yeah.
That's great.
Like, Montreal loves its classic rock. Yeah. You know, but for Bon Jovi is just so popular there. Bon Jovi really was the first artist that I was, whoa, you know, and that Crossroads album.
Mm-hmm. Crossroads,
was unbelievable. These Days came out in 95 too. Very underrated album, great album. But then really, what was the next band that really took over my life? Probably the Beastie Boys as a teenager. You know, and then it kind of became this cycle for probably the rest of my life where I just get really, really into a band. And I just destroy their catalog nonstop for 3 to 6 months, and then I move on. And I'll still listen to them here and there, but for 6 months, I'm just obsessed with them. It's all I'll listen to.
I get that way, too, and sadly, mostly it's when somebody dies.
Oh, sure.
Like this year, obviously, besides Lemmy, when Glenn Frey died, I was Eagles,
Bowie
Eagles,
Eagles, too,
Bowie.
Right?
I went Super Bowie.
Prince.
And Prince. I went Super Prince. All three. And it was never, obviously, I'm a big Prince fan
as
a guy.
Because it starts as reminiscent, so you want to honor their memory, so you want to listen to a little bit. And then you're like, whoa,
you go
this
deeper.
Is genius.
And that's when I really started getting into Bowie and Prince, because I knew the hits, but it's the deep tracks that are really, really good.
All your
as
favorite
well.
Artists, it's like,
sure,
that.
Of course.
First you fall in love with the hits, but then you dig deeper and you're like, well, this is the real good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But to that point, this has kind of nothing to do with nothing, but how great is it when you hear a song or a band that you've grown up listening to your whole life, you haven't heard them in a while, even if it's a song like, I'm just going to use a bad example here, but Summer of 69, you can't go to a bar without Summer of 69. Like, it's the token BS rock song.
Sure. Yep.
But then sometimes you're alone in a room or something, and you just, and the music just hits you just right, and you realize... this is a masterpiece. That happened to me the other day on the plane. I bought these new Bose headphones. I don't buy anything expensive.
Right.
I don't know why. I don't know. I'm just still poor person mentality. So I sprung for these headphones because I travel so much and whatever that I was asleep on a plane and I had the iPod on shuffle and Queen, Somebody to Love came on.
Oh, well, yeah.
And you can't see this because you're listening, but I was asleep and then my eyes opened like that. And I just said, this is the greatest song ever written. I can't believe this. And I restarted the song, and I couldn't believe that anyone composed this music.
Right.
It's genius.
It's I agree.
Incredible. It is incredible.
That could be the best Queen song that out of 100 choices.
You want to talk creativity. The arrangement.
The vocals on that alone.
Oh, my God.
Crazy.
The harmonies, the arrangement.
Not to mention just his passion.
Oh, my
God. Sure.
I have goosebumps.
But it's like when if you know a girl, right? And you know her for a year and you walk past her and it's cool, but then something will snap or you go, oh my God, like she's so attracted to this girl or she's so beautiful, whatever it may be.
The light hits her just right.
Yeah, yeah, songs like that happened to me once, we went through our Guns N' Roses usually. I forgot how much I love the song Locomotive.
When we played it on the
bus. That song is,
and you were explaining to me why it's great too. And then all of a sudden I said, well, yeah, I'm starting to get excited too. Locomotive is great.
To me, it's the epitome of Guns N' Roses. It's intricate. It's long. It's memorable. It's the solos are
but
great.
But it's digestible.
The change is digestible.
To anyone.
But I'd probably, you know, you hear it once in a while, but it just hit me like Locomotive is genius, you know?
So that night, I think me and you were both really feeling the music.
Yeah.
We played the Beatles. I was listening to Oh Darling. My eyes were squinting. My fist was stabbing.
Going back to what you said earlier, we were listening to our music on the bus, and we were having
thrilled.
Fun.
The night
I'm
of
sure
my life.
The bus was bored.
Yeah.
So mad. Yeah. Like, where's my R. Kelly?
We never played music. The only reason was you asked for it, and okay, let's play some Guns N' Roses. Yeah.
I think that's when we both discovered our love for the Beatles.
Yes. And
you guys didn't know that until recently?
No, we talked about it at length.
I didn't know how big of a Beatles fan he was.
Yeah, well, I'm huge into the Beatles. That's another band that for about a year only listened to.
Only the Beatles, which is easy to do.
Yeah, it's very easy. They have so many good songs. Funny, I was not a Beatles fan probably until, had to have been.
Later in life.
5 years ago?
Yep.
Yeah, 5 years
really?
Ago.
Really?
Well, you know, I knew the tunes.
Sure.
But my folks didn't grow up listening to them. It wasn't part of the catalog, really. My grandparents weren't into music that much, so it wasn't a big deal. And I knew the songs from commercials and stuff like that.
You can't not hear a Beatles song growing up, you know?
You know them. You can't identify them if you don't know the names or whatever. But, like, all of a sudden, I actually owe it to the video game Rock Band.
Right.
They came out with a complete Beatles version.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I had it.
A complete Beatles version. And I was, I'm like, oh my God.
This is genius.
This is incredible music.
Yeah.
Where was I?
You realize how layered those songs are as well.
Under your nose.
They're right there.
Your whole life.
I'm like, oh, I heard that in my whole life.
It's the girl that suddenly realizes she's hot.
Oh my God.
In the movie, right?
Yeah. You can't believe it.
Right off.
Yeah, she's all that.
The quintessential song that I'm talking about right now, by the way, hits me all the time, Twist and Shout.
No.
You heard that song your whole life a million times. Go ahead and listen to it carefully now. John Lennon's vocals on that song. That's punk rock, dude. He's just screaming his head off.
Yeah, his voice was raw.
Yes, you know the story, right? They recorded the album in a day. Last song, he only had one take left in him, and he swung for the fences.
Yeah,
and apparently
he could blow his voice out on that song.
And apparently, in an interview, God, I have goosebumps just talking about it. I'm getting excited. But in the interview, he would said years later that for years later after that, his throat still bothered
still
him.
Bugged him
for years after that.
Throat ripper.
Is that your favorite Beatles song?
Top five. I think I don't really have a specific order, but I have to put. I think if I had to choose one, Oh Darling.
Like you said,
it's got it all.
I can't say no.
It's got everything that's great about the Beatles in one perfect song.
So, you know, the one that's the same for me is from Abbey Road, was I Want You, She's So Heavy. We talked about that.
And you told
me,
great point you made that opened my eyes. You know when someone just says something and he said, this is Sabbath before Sabbath.
It's the first heavy metal song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of that riff.
Helter Skelter, Revolution, and that song are the first heavy metal songs that I can think of.
God, they're good.
Yeah, that's before Zeppelin, before Sabbath.
Yeah, that sounds, you know what, deceptively a heavy song because you only hear the chorus, right? Yeah. You only hear the chorus or commercials when you're like not really listening. You go back and listen to the whole song.
Song?
I want you.
Oh, nice.
If you're not paying attention to it, you're just like,
that's what I'm saying.
And the bass playing is crazy. The drums are nuts. Like, everything is so good on that song, and no one knows it. That's another reason I like it.
Yeah.
Because it's mine.
Yeah. Just like Locomotive.
Yeah. That's
no one,
right.
No one is going to say that's their favorite song.
All Guns N' Roses tunes are great that they play live.
Yeah.
But that one is still mine.
And you know what's hilarious? I think I'm realizing this as we talk. This all goes back to 16-year-old Jericho, Chris, who's still like, you know, screw Duran Duran. You guys all like Twist and Shout. Well, I Want You is mine.
Yeah. That was my
you guys
way
all listen to
it.
I Want You is mine.
I had to, and this is another thing that you don't get anymore, but I had to give Metallica up to the world. Like, oh, yeah, they were our band for the metalheads all throughout Ride the Lightning, then Master Puppets, and now they're filling arenas, but nobody knows who they are.
Yeah.
Justice for All, filling arenas.
Black Album.
The Cult is opening for them.
Yeah.
They're huge, and no one knows who they are. And then the Black Album comes out. Suddenly,
boom.
Everybody knows who they are.
Inner Sandman's number one hit.
High school chicks are going to the concerts, and it's like, it hurt because it's like, you remember the big thing was Metallica fucking sold out. And it was another thing at Load, like, could go from Justice to Load. By design on their part, it was completely basic and groove ridden, but still it bothered me. I hated it for a year because now I have to give up my stake and like, I know this band. Come here, want to buy a watch? You know, and that's kind of part of you. You always
counterculture appeal.
Sure. Yeah.
Right,
and
that's something that I think we talked about at the table earlier today. We haven't touched on it yet, but ultimately that's what. When I was talking about to Neville about punk rock or reggae, the big theme that I think really strikes a chord with me is the anti-establishment. Basically, rock and roll is about sticking it to the man.
Right.
I love that. Who doesn't love sticking it to the man? I mean, you know, sticking it to the man is what it's all about.
Well, not everybody loves sticking it to the man. That's why that's why sticking it to the man exists.
You're so right. And that's why, to almost come back full circle here, maybe that is why I was drawn to this music, because I'm about sticking it to man, and then this music comes along and it's about sticking it to the man.
Yeah.
But then to ask the exact opposite, am I into sticking it to the man because the music I like is about sticking it to the man?
Well, being 46 and a couple of weeks ago, there was some stuff that happened where there was some misinformed information was being reported by some of the websites, wrestling websites, right? Or Twitter feeds and stuff.
Shocker.
And I was like, I read something and it made me so mad. I'm like, I'm just going to bury these and all I was thinking about is getting in the ring.
And Rose,
where
course.
Axel goes on this tirade and calls these guys by name.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Never been done before.
Can you imagine?
Never.
Because they were scared to death because they're not gonna cover us. He's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm gonna call out Andy Setcher. I'm gonna call out Bob Guccione Jr. Yeah. I'm gonna call out
Mick
Wall
from Kerrang.
Well, you're
just pissed off because your dad's getting more pussy than you.
Right. But he's now saying, don't even put me in your magazine. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna embarrass you guys. Those guys will live in infamy forever when the biggest rock and roll band in the world put out their new album and they're all on it.
That is mind-boggling.
It's amazing. So I did the same thing with my little tweet, which, you know, whatever, and they go, oh yeah, these guys are gonna not talk about it. I don't care. It was good enough for Axl, it's good enough for me.
Dude, that song is just incredible.
So angry, so dangerous, like we talked.
Yeah, get in the ring, dude.
Yeah,
ballsy, huge,
completely.
That's the thing. Yeah,
what was your first concert, Seth?
My first concert was Korn.
Okay.
Korn's a headliner, Papa Roach open, and Power Man 5000.
Wow.
That was a hell of a year 2000 lineup right there.
I want to say it was like 98 or something that. It was, they had canceled the show. I'd bought tickets or something. They canceled the show, and then they came back with a different lineup. And like Papa Roach, Last Resort had just come out.
I
want to say 2000, no?
Nah, that was 98. It came out in 98.
Yeah, late 90s for sure. Yeah.
I know it sounds crazy, but I remember being in middle school, 7th or 8th grade, listening to it, so it would have been pre-2000. Yeah, that was my first concert. Me and my brother went, and it was sick, man. It was awesome. I was that was my new metal phase.
Yeah.
Korn was actually, you mentioned Metallica being that band where you like had to give them up to the masses. Mm-hmm. Korn was that band for me.
For you?
Yeah, I had to give them up to the masses because their first couple records really no one knew who they were. New metal was still sort of an undergroundish kind of cool movement at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Before
then it became
because this is before Limp Bizkit, before Kid Rock kind of really exploded, and so new metal and Slipknot wasn't around. Yeah, like new metal, the sound hadn't reached mainstream yet.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they come out with Follow the Leader. They're on TRL.
Yeah. Right.
Like Carson Daly's like, Korn is number three today. right behind Christina Aguilera's Genie in a Bottle.
Yeah, yeah. They went mainstream. They were mainstream. Yeah, right.
And I was like,
But did you have the same anger that Chris had towards Metallica? Like they sold out?
They had Follow the Leader. That didn't feel like a sellout album because that kind of
just the world came along to what you already knew.
Yeah. And then they came out with Issues, which I liked. But at that point, I was still kind of like, Like I had turned my back.
Turned on.
I'd gone, I'd gone done, away. Man. I was like,
you
all right.
You turned
I'm,
off.
You know, it's funny talking about what we were mentioning before about established like Bon Jovi taking a lesson. Jake, the first time I saw Korn was Ozzy. They were opening for Ozzy.
Yes.
It was Deftones, Korn, and Ozzy.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, for me, it's like, wow.
But those bands played Ozfest and stuff.
Well, that was 96 though. It was on Osmosis tour. So okay. They were really that's, young.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
He took them out. And that was like, I like that attitude of like, let's give these guys a shot.
Yeah, shoot. They might have been touring on their self. They might have one album. Album with like 12 songs at that point.
Yeah, probably, right?
Yeah.
My first concert, the first band I ever saw live was the Thompson Twins, who were like an early 80s, almost like a culture club thing, because they're opening for another one of my favorite bands, The Police.
Oh, fantastic.
So The Police was the headliner.
The Police was the first concert I went to, yeah.
Right. That's a great first concert.
The great, great first concert, great band. I still remember it was August 23rd, 1983.
Whoa.
Yeah. Wow.
It was the first time my mom let me go to a concert.
I think I remember the date of mine too, maybe July something 2000.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But to be able to see before The Police reunited, I'm like, I never get a chance to see them. That's awesome. I got to see The Police. And then my first, listen this for Bill in 1984, the first metal concert I ever saw was Iron Maiden with Twisted Sister supporting.
You know what?
Yeah. That's like, what a 1-2 punch for 1984. That was like the best tour ever.
I'm jealous. I really am. That all these bands, like you got to see them in their prime, you know? And when it was a movement,
right?
You know, like I've seen every band I've ever wanted to see, but I saw Bob Dylan, you know, 5 years ago.
Right.
I wish I could have seen Bob Dylan in Greenwich Village in 1966 or whatever, Like, man, imagine being there in some cafe. And say you could say, or being at Shea Stadium when the Beatles played, you couldn't hear them anyway. But you know what I'm saying? Like the history.
I saw Metallica at the Playhouse Theater in Winnipeg, November, let's say 8th, 1986. Six weeks after Cliff Burton died.
Oh, wow.
That's how fast they were when they got back on the road with Jason Newsted. Wow. 6 weeks later.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Dude, they all could have died in that bus
crazy.
Crash.
And that just shows like they were just so out of it. They just went right back into it, you know? And if
what else are they gonna do?
But still grieve for a bit, maybe some kind of monster thing was based around that.
Yeah, they even talked about that. They never grieved.
If the three of us went to the Playhouse Theater, you would not believe how small it is. At the time, it seemed okay. I went there for a play a couple of years ago for Christmas. I was like, Metallica played here? It was going to the Performance Center for us to have a match. You'd be like, here?
Yeah.
You know, but it's, like you said, I got the chance to experience all that.
That's
which is
crazy,
cool, so.
Dude. I love that. I love that going to, that was one of my favorites, is seeing the bands in the tiny venues before they got big, you know?
Right.
20 people when like they were, you know, the undercard and no one really cared about them. Like half the audience hadn't showed up because they were there to see the headliner, and it was like 30 people in a dingy bar, and then you see them like on the big stage like doing their thing,
playing
like
Conan O'Brien or something.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Totally. Are you guys friends with anybody from the bands that you appreciated? You mentioned John Denae from is it Donis or Denae? Whatever. John from Shadows Fall / Anthrax. He was looking for you in Hartford. He's told me to tell you to say hi.
I was bummed that I didn't get to see him.
Yeah,
that's one of the coolest things to me, dude. You mentioned the Parkway video that went viral with me headbanging the other day. Those guys are really cool, and I've been a fan of them for long time now. But I got to buy them. I got to take them out after the show and buy them food, like have a great meal.
You were telling me that was a big deal.
Big deal to me. Just to hang out with them, and like we had a great time. Like we were long lost friends. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I remember leaving the bar, the restaurant, just being like high on life. Like I hadn't been in a mosh pit in 10 years, so I thought I was gonna die.
Well, this is
so
what I want to bring up.
I was fired up from just the adrenaline rush, and then we ate all this food, which one of my favorite things.
Loves
to
eat
food,
and can eat whatever he wants because he works so hard in the gym.
Right. Right, right.
Very jealous.
Great food, great company, and I was like, man,
this is life. This is life.
And the thing is cool,
this is success.
It's the mutual respect where you respect their work and they respect yours in turn.
Yeah.
That to me is still the coolest thing. Absolutely. Still the coolest thing.
Right. So there's I guess something you brought up just then really, and I want to ask you the same question because it's so funny that this Seth video went viral when it did, because that week, in fact,
that week,
2 days before this video comes out, I'm having this conversation with Seth, and we're talking about, you know, obviously Seth's pretty high profile. I'm on television as well. And, you know, when you go to your concerts, do you like to, you know, because now you know the bands, they hook you up, you're on the side of the stage with like the cool kids, kind of nodding your head like this, like, yeah, I know the band. Because you can't party as much as you want to party. Uh-huh. So I remember the first time I kind of had that experience was I befriended Lars Fredriksson from Rancid because he was a massive wrestling fan.
Big time.
I had no idea.
Great guy.
As you know, as everyone knows
by now.
He
gave me a set of 20 DVDs, the best of Chris Jericho, that he compiled. Dude, he 20 CDs, he gave them to me. I was like, that's pretty nice.
And
man.
You want to talk about
or DVDs, sorry.
Yeah. Like, I had that experience of, like, I can't believe this. And exactly what you said, mutual respect. This guy influenced my life, his music when I was, you know, 14 or whatever. And now he booked me. He ran a wrestling show. That's how much he loves wrestling. He booked a show, a one-off. I was the only, like, name indie guy he brought in. And I met him there, and so we kind of became friends. So I went to go see him in Pomona one time in California, and Punk was there, actually. CM Punk was there, too. I didn't know he'd be there. And we're watching the show from, like, behind the drum kit, you know?
Yeah.
And sound I just, terrible. The light is literally, I feel like it's, I'm on, the spotlight's on me. I feel like they're watching me. And I'm trying to enjoy the concert and do my little dance. I'm like, man, this is like, I can't be up here. Yeah. And finally, halfway through concert, I said, I'll see you in a bit. And I just went in the pit. Because I belong in the pit. I'm not side stage guy. I belong in the pit. So I talked to Seth about this.
Yes.
To come back to this story, I say, so, you know, when you go see these bands, you go to the side stage or you're a pit guy. He goes, oh, no. I'm past those pit days. I can't do that anymore. I can't do that anymore. I side stage or I sit or whatever. I can't do it anymore. 2 days later, I get a tweet of I guess one of the things that went viral was people would set Seth's headbanging to different songs. Somebody tagged a video of Seth headbanging to my song, so they tagged me in it, and I thought, God, when is this video from? Because he doesn't get in the pit anymore. It was that week, 2 days
that
later.
Week, man.
And the story he told me is, you know, he was sitting.
I was sitting. And then he got in the Eagle's Nest.
That's
watching.
Right.
I was having a great time, like I always do. And then Parkway played one of their older songs. I believe it was Gimme a D.
And he couldn't.
And I couldn't handle it.
Yes.
Over the music overcame.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I felt that same feeling when I was, you know, 13, 14 years old, that aggression.
Magic.
It hit me and I had to be in there. I had my buddy Eddie with me. I said, Ed, let's go.
You gotta go.
We're going down. Let's go. And then we went down. I'm like, we'll just go for one song, right. Ed. 20 minutes later. Out my head banging, screaming with Winston at the top of my lungs.
And like, some girl had to film it and ruin the whole thing.
But let me leave him alone. Lemmy had a great quote.
If you're listening to this,
he said,
girl,
if you think you're too old to rock, then you are.
Oh, that's
you're
great.
Never too old to rock.
Right.
Exactly. We played the Kiss Cruise last year, and the gimmick of the Kiss Cruise is they're going to play Kiss Alive in its entirety. If I had to tell you what my favorite album of all time is, I might say that.
Wow.
I know every note back and forth, Paul's raps all the way through. So they had us, it's a theater on the cruise ship, and we're sitting in the balcony right by, there's like a glass panel so you don't fall over the edge. Dude, I went so insane that people in the crowd were like, look at Jericho, he's going nuts. And if that glass thing wasn't there, I might have, using it as my guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And dude, I was like, I couldn't help it. Shannon Tweed's behind me like, what the up with this guy, and I just couldn't stop. I didn't care.
That's the
best. It was my Kiss Alive in its entirety. My dream.
It overcame you.
Yeah, I don't care if everyone's looking at me. Think, and of course they're not going to think I'm an idiot. But if anyone does, I don't care.
Yeah, who cares?
It was one of the greatest gigs I've ever seen.
So that was one of the things I debated with Seth. Is what if people see you? Because I get a little,
Rammy.
You know, yeah. If when
that's the
concerts on my outlet, that's all I have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't get to freak out, like, maybe alone in my apartment once in a blue moon or something.
Right.
But, like, really, yeah, a good car ride. But I don't even ride alone anymore. I'm just so busy, right? I'm always on the road.
Yeah.
So concerts are my outlets. So I think, oh, man, like, I don't want the big fear that we were talking about is, like, I don't want someone filming me or taking a picture of it. And then it happened to Seth 2 days later. But then I thought to myself, you know what? If they see that, good, fine. He's one of us.
Yes,
exactly. He's not too cool for school. That is my character on TV. That's me in real life.
But that's what I would do. That's also music. I've always found if you meet someone that's like likes the same band as you, you're automatically friends.
Oh, dude, first thing, yeah.
You know?
you're
so
in with them.
When you go into the pit or you're sitting on the floor, because I'm not a side stage guy. I like the sound.
You need
I need the sound and the vision.
Face.
And most of the time, some people will be happier to see you because you may be five people around or 10 people around, and you can take a couple pictures. But as soon as the gig starts,
they leave you alone
because they want to watch too.
Right.
So it's really not as bad as you might think. It's
but
fine.
I feel a little bit like if you're really I go nuts. They're watching it with like watching
care.
You and not watching the show.
I do not give. I don't care because that, like you said, that's my outlet. That's I'm not Chris Jericho. I'm a fan of whichever band I'm watching. You know, and every time I will go completely wacko if it's the type of band that I want to see. Sometimes I go to bands like. My wife wanted to see Pink, and I'll go and appreciate it, but I'm not going to go nuts rocking to it. You know?
This is almost a different problem, but similar situation with the thing that happened to Seth. But I remember once I went to see Springsteen with Cass.
He loves Springsteen.
Well, he loves Springsteen.
That's his boy.
Yeah. Anyway, so you know, we're having a good time, and we're dancing, and people are filming us dance. And at this point, we're not on TV. And that just annoys me to no end. You know,
but you have to put yourself in the shoes of the fan. Like if I'm standing,
look at those guys having fun. Why don't you just have fun too?
No, but you. But I think let's say I'm the girl that's at Parkway Drive.
Yeah.
And obviously she knows who you are because she. If I turn over and Seth Rollins is standing there going nuts, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I probably wouldn't film it because I understand. But if I was a pure fan, I would film that just to have it. As an experience.
As a life like, thing,
this is how good the show. He was there right beside me. Look at this. Yeah. Hey, cousin Annie, look at this.
You
know?
Rather have it as a story than like some...
I agree.
You know?
Yeah. You, me, we Chris get it. But this is a 16-year-old girl.
Right.
And that's how she lives her life. She doesn't
and
know
And Seth Rollins,
difference.
Her favorite, is standing right next to her at her favorite concert. That could be almost like the time-space continuum. If that happened at the same time, your head might explode.
Right.
Yeah, dude.
You know?
Think about it. Think about it if you were at some concert and all of a sudden, you know, like... Who's your favorite wrestler, right?
Yeah.
Like, Shawn Michaels shows up. Bret Hart's there just...
Yeah. Going nuts.
Like, what in the... What the hell? What is Bret Hart doing here?
Yeah, he's going nuts.
This
I went to Kiss last night, and Hulk Hogan was right beside me, like, singing every word to shout it out loud or something.
Exactly.
Be like, what?
I had a loss.
That doesn't happen.
I was at a concert for Against Me, which is one of my favorite bands. And I got particularly nuts this night. Like, I was feeling it. You know, I was waiting for months for this concert. I start losing it in the crowd. And one of the things I do sometimes, I'll just grab someone who's next to me almost by the shirt. Now, here's the thing, okay? I have this thing where people often, I don't drink. I've never drank in my life. People will think I'm drunk, but there's a controlled rage there to where they kind of realize I'm not a threat.
Yeah.
Because you know when there's a drunk guy and he's ruining the pit?
It's like being in the mosh pit.
Like, they could tell I'm wild, but for some reason, I think I'm putting out a non-threatening vibe.
Right.
So for some reason, no one's ever punched me in the face. Even though I'm grabbing them by the collar and I'm pulling them right into my face and screaming the lyrics into their face. So I'm grabbing this guy all night, like with my back to the stage, just screaming the lyrics at him. And then the concert ends. He goes, hey man, by the way, could I get a picture? Huge fan. I was like, oh, geez, I gotta be more careful here. You don't know anymore. Like
I'm getting to that.
Especially now with television exposure.
But think about him. Sammy Zayn.
Right, so that's his story.
This is great.
His entire life.
Yeah.
Right, and to your point, you know, he didn't need a picture of it or didn't need it. Like, that story,
that
he's got
experience.
That. And that's a cool fan.
Yeah, absolutely.
You
know? Like you mentioned,
I wouldn't have been that cool.
You mentioned the Keith Richards thing. when I got the chance to meet him at the Fallon show, Jimmy took me there. I didn't take a camera. I had my phone in the pocket, but I was talking to Keith Richards in a space about as big as this for 15 minutes about everything, and he's talking about anything I want to talk about. And then Jimmy goes, hey, would you mind taking a picture with my friend? And I was like, I almost was like, don't, he might get mad. He said, of course. Had Jimmy not taken that, I didn't need a picture because I had the experience in my head. And every time I go downstairs to the bar the night in Glasgow, there's so many fans that want to take pictures. I'm like, why? Let's just have a drink. That's better than a picture.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
You know? How many?
But you can't share a drink on Facebook. That's the thing.
Exactly.
That's the world we live in now.
Yes,
you know?
You can't rationalize or prove that you met Jericho or met Sammy or met Seth.
That's a whole other discussion. Like, what do we really get out of these pictures? But we'll save that for another podcast.
Oh, yeah, it's like a modern day autograph. Like, what's an autograph?
What is it?
I used to collect autographs and stick them on my wall, and maybe it's just piece of you.
Was it you who told me the story about Steve Martin? He could give the business card. You met Steve Martin.
Oh, did he?
Somebody would ask for... Oh, I thought it was you who told me. Somebody, like, if you'd ask Steve Martin for an autograph back in the day, he'd just hand you a business card that says... You've met Steve Martin. Here's your proof. You know what I mean?
That's great.
I've always thought that's actually really good. I always considered getting a stamp.
Right. The rubber stamp. Boom, boom. So last question. What's your favorite concert you ever went to?
Oh, man. I can't answer that.
Man.
There's probably
favorite?
like...
Or pull one out of your head that you really loved.
Okay, I got one. But this is because of the story that precedes it. So I was 16. I had just gotten like my driver's license, right? Like where I can go places, but still live with the folks. So my mom kind of still, you know, was she had given me the car. You know, this
yeah,
is your
yeah,
car
you're
for
at
your
that
birthday,
transitional age, right?
But you still have to ask
you
permission
have to answer
for certain things. So she had, there was a concert in Milwaukee, which is out of state for me. I live in Davenport, Iowa. It's about a 3.5 hour drive. There's a concert in Milwaukee that I wanted to go to. Shadows Fall, 16 years old.
At the rave?
It was at the rave in Milwaukee.
The haunted rave?
Yeah, man. Hell, we played there. It was downstairs, too, yeah, in the basement. There, yeah. It was. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was Shadows Fall headlining, Shai Hulud, which is an awesome kind of melodic hardcore band, and then Unearthed was opening for them. Mm. And, you know, my mom was like, no, 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 you cannot go to this concert under no circumstances. Can you drive up there? Absolutely not. Well, my folks are divorced, so I would go to my dad's on the weekends. This concert happened to be on a Saturday night.
Perfect.
So I was like, guess what, guys?
Rock and Roll Rebellion.
We are driving to Milwaukee. I got a car. I got a license. Let's go. I made one mistake. My mom would have never known, right? This is... You know, I don't remember how 16, so I might have been 2002. Yeah. Like, there was, I don't even know if I had a cell phone at this point in time.
Right.
Like, it just, there was, she couldn't attract me. I made one mistake. I was too considerate, and I left a note for my dad letting him know where we were going and said, please don't tell mom.
Rookie mistake.
Oh, they're divorced. There's no reason he'll tell her.
Dad's my buddy.
Yeah, he's my buddy. Sure enough, dad ratted me out. But like, I remember going, the thrill of going up there, knowing that I wasn't supposed to be going up there. We get into the metal show, and the rave's kind of like a, it's a cool joint, man.
It's a great place.
Yeah, there's like an upstairs and a downstairs. And the downstairs is really just like a
and it sells alcohol, right? So you're kind of in a bar and you're 16. Really feeling that like, whoa, I'm part of the world.
Super like I wasn't supposed to be there at all under any circumstances. And I remember just unloading in there, just having a great, I mean, I'm talking like just deep sweats,
shirt off,
hair drenched, like just that's a mess coming out of there. The next day, you can't even hold your head up because you had to head back so hard. Like,
what was I thinking?
Yeah, bumps and bruises. You just, you know, you bloodied everywhere. It was so awesome. I remember getting back home and like, my mom just gave me the when I finally ended up seeing it. Like, we didn't even have 2 days. We didn't talk. Like when I went back home, like we didn't talk.
worth it though. Because now the story not only lives. Look at it. If only they could see his look.
I love the considerate rebel. You're gonna do it, but I will leave a note.
Well, I didn't want to leave my dad in the dark because five in the morning.
Right.
Panic, yeah, you know, and he didn't have any way to get a hold of anybody at that time. So I was like, for sure my dad will be cool. But, he was cool, but like.
But in the long run, it's great that you went.
Oh, 100% you'll never forget that I went. Yeah, and nothing happened. It was a great time. Like, you know, proved you wrong, mom. But yeah, it was sick. It was a sick show. I sweat to death, and we had a great time. And nothing bad came of it. Yeah. So it was. But that was that one just because of the. I mean, I had some great lineups. I got to see Pantera. Before Dime passed away. Which is, you know, I was 15. That was my second concert.
That's one of those things, like, you can never do that again.
Yeah, never.
I saw Beastie Boys is one. MCA passed away.
Yeah.
I got to see them twice. They're one of my favorite bands of all time. Yeah. And now I'll never be able to see them ever again. It's over.
It's done. I saw Pantera in 95 at the Warfield in San Francisco, which is not like the Playhouse Theater.
Yeah.
And I actually saw Dime. He took a shit in a bucket on stage. And I can still see in my head the shit falling out of his ass into the bucket. And I still can't remember why. I've asked Vinny about it. He's like, I used to do that all the time, man. But I was like, it could be the first human being I've ever seen shit. I remember it falling into the bucket.
Well,
here you go.
That's great.
Did he wipe his ass?
I can't say if he did or not. I would assume he did, but those guys
are scummy. I'm thinking that's not of importance if you're shitting in a bucket on stage.
He probably just pulled up in camouflage shorts and just kept on rocking.
Did his deal, man. Get his V on.
What's your favorite concert?
I really can't pick one, but I can tell you there's a few that are special for various reasons, but off the top of my head, the first time I saw Against Me play at Fun Fest, that was incredible. I saw Guns N' Okay, so a couple of them that are special that they're not necessarily the best. It's just I never thought it would happen. Was seeing Guns N' Roses I never thought I'd see him. Mm-hmm. And granted, it wasn't with the Slash reunion thing that's happened now, but it was the big return in 2006 at the Hammerstein.
Okay, yeah.
I was at the first show.
Nice.
Fantastic.
So that was insane because Axl was back.
Was that the remember Buckethead?
This lineup is post Buckethead.
Oh, okay.
Buckethead.
Bumblefoot.
Bumblefoot had just gotten hired.
Oh, is this the Chinese democracy time period?
Right before. It's like leaks are coming out from Chinese democracy. Right. The world's excited.
Yeah.
At least my world is excited. Yeah. You know, me and Super Dragon are freaking out on AOL Instant Messenger. Yeah. And now I get to see Axl Rose. And now that's not the crazy part to me. It was in the Hammerstein.
That's cool.
And I've wrestled in the Hammerstein.
Yeah. Right.
And it only holds about 3,000 people. So to see them in that intimate, like, you know, it was just
intimate place.
There's some bands like, I don't know. You know, when I saw Bruce Springsteen or Bob Dylan, it was cool just because those guys are icons.
Yeah.
But like, I can't sing every song. Guns N' Roses, Beastie Boys, you know, Against Me. These are songs. I know every single word to every single song. So I'm losing it.
Yeah.
And another one that was real special for a couple of reasons was Faith No More in 2000, I want to say 11 in Australia.
That's cool.
So one of my big things when I was a indie guy was I really tried to coincide concerts with places I would travel. You know, just live this incredible life where I'm getting paid to do what I love and do the things I love. Right. And Faith No More, as you know, broke up.
Yeah.
I want to say in what, 98? And they always said, all of them said, we'll never reunite. And if we did, just know it's because we sold out and it was for the money. So whatever. I don't care. Yeah, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe I got to see him. Yeah. All these songs, I couldn't believe I was seeing them in Australia, no less.
That's amazing. Cool. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, I don't know, the first Bon Jovi. ICP is an incredible concert, actually, because, you know, the Faygo and the fans are so passionate.
They got a lot going on.
You know what it's like? It's like if you've only been at WWE shows and then you went to ECW in like 98. What am I a part of right now? You know what I mean? Yeah, it was great. I don't know.
The two that hit me is one was the first time I saw McCartney in 02.
Oh, that's
because it was like the soundtrack of your life.
Yep.
Not just for me, but for everybody in there, where you know every one of these songs, you have memories and attachments to all of them. And during Hey Jude, I saw a grandfather, let's say he was 70, and a kid, let's say they were 7, and they're both singing at the top of their lungs. I'm like,
and there's the Beatles right
yes,
there.
Yes, and what other band would have that 70 to 7? Maybe, you know, a few others, but like that was the majority of the thing. And then the other one was actually, I have to tell a funny story about that. I was up at the balcony, I had the worst seats.
This is a great story.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I've told.
No, it's great.
And I'm looking down on the stage, and after 3 songs, a pit opens up on the stage and a piano comes up. So Paul is walking backwards with his guitar.
Holding his guitar in the air.
And he's got his thumbs up. And when he's on stage, he's real, like, just, he walks all cool. Like, he's fun. Like, you know.
He's spry.
And he's walking backwards. And I see what's going to happen. He's going to walk right into this hole.
Backwards.
Where, you know how it is. If you take a bumper, you don't expect it. And it hurts.
Especially when there's a drop like
this.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's, at the time, 61 something. And I'm screaming, look out, Paul. And I'm like,
you're
70
like the
rows.
In our matches. Turn around,
Paul. And here he goes and teeter totters right into the hole and lands half on the piano, half not. So he's like taking a bump on the side of the table, which is, we know.
Like, are we talking like the Vince McMahon St. Valentine's Day Massacre bump?
It was more like right. And so everyone's just like, quiet. Yeah. The whole place is just dead silent. And it was like, oh, you can see the murmur. And like, classic McCartney. He's got no real roadies. He's got some old guy with like a flashlight running across the stage. And like the bass or the guitar player is getting in there. And finally, after about 30 seconds or so, he kind of climbs up and you see his head. And you can tell he's probably like, what just happened? Yeah. Like, it hurt. And then he realizes where he is. And then he just looks and then he puts his thumb up in the air.
Yeah. Monster pop.
Huge pop. Yeah. Then they help him out of the pit. He comes around the side and he's like, oh, I'm going to change the set list. And we're going to do Fixing a Hole now.
Ah.
Called it on the fly
to play Fixing a Hole. So it was like, oh, that's so great.
But you know, here's what makes me, and I asked you this the first time you told me this question. The story, it makes me skeptical because, you know, these bands have these catalogs, right? Paul McCartney's got an extensive catalog.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're in a band, you know, you got to rehearse these things. You don't just
pull
one out of your ass after, but, you know, 40 years of not playing it.
When you're playing with bands like that, it's like going to see Springsteen. That band knows
everything.
Because they keep pulls signs of the crowd, right, shows it to the drummer, and then they have to fall, right, into it.
Yeah.
So I think Paul probably could play that song by himself. And if you're a professional musician, you know that song.
Right.
You know, it'd be like if we had to go into the ring with Cena right now or something.
Right. You know his moves.
You know his moves. And if you don't know it, you'll figure it out and just go, right? And then the other one was Metallica, 30th anniversary show.
Oh.
Well, you got to tell a little part B to that story.
Oh, sorry. So the part B. So I go, that was the first show of the tour in Tampa. Last show of the tour was in LA, Paul McCartney still. And I went to that one as well. Just happened to be in town. Took my friend, sat right behind Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, who were angry at me because I was yelling and screaming so much. And I'm like, not tonight, guys.
Yeah. It's rock and roll, man. Yeah, go to hell, Goldie Hawn.
Yeah, exactly.
We are.
F you, Goldie. F you, Snake Plissken.
You're part of the establishment.
They play the first three songs, and then the hole opens and the piano comes up. Now, when it happened in Tampa, I was like, somebody's getting fired for this. Like, some roadie forgot to tell him.
Yeah, sure.
Paul, you know, or the cue or whatever. So he says, well, you know, this is funny. The first show of the tour, this hole opened up. And I didn't see, and I fell inside, and I was screaming, I was there. Goldie Hawn's looking like, shut up, I was there, Goldie. And so he goes, and, you know, and I'm like, oh, the problem was, he goes, I wasn't paying attention because I was too busy looking at two birds in the front row.
Yeah,
two chicks in the front row.
Yes.
And I was like, that's rock and roll.
He
was so enamored with the chicks. He's 61.
Yeah.
He's probably banged 10,000 chicks.
Yeah.
He's still probably looking at those two in the front row. Either. And it's like, boy, they're pretty hot.
Yeah.
He fell, right? It's like the best punchline ever. It's like, if you think you're too old to rock and roll, you are.
Too
bad.
But the Metallica 30th anniversary at the Fillmore, about 1,000 seats.
That's incredible.
Over the course of 4 days, they played 80 songs. Songs, all of them were different, and they went deep. They played shit. They opened with "To Live Is to Die," the instrumental from "To Just." They've never played it. They learned it. They learned all four instrumentals so they can open each show
with an instrument
with Orion, Cthulhu, "To Live Is to Die," and then "Suicide and Redemption" from "Death Magnetic." I was like, who would think of that?
Dude, that's so cool.
And how much rehearsals did they have to
all
do?
4 days?
I did not go to the four. I was actually getting ready to come back here to WWE, and I had to go to Calgary to do some training with Lance because I was. But and another, like the denouement of the story was that I was there as a guest of Metallica.
Yeah, it's
because Lars
the
asked,
feather in your cap.
Yes, yeah, and dude, for the extra so cool. bonus, they had called me and asked me to do a video. Congratulating them on 30 years, and they were running these videos throughout the show. And my video aired right after Avril Lavigne, who got booed out of the building, and right before Bono. It's like Avril Lavigne, Jericho, and Bono.
That's a great spot.
And it's like, and I was there as a guest, and this.
And you probably got the biggest pop of those three for Metallica's clientele.
Yeah.
You know,
I think Bono got a pretty good reaction, but
really?
I killed Avril Lavigne.
Yeah,
I killed her. Yeah, I mean, she was the shits, anyways. But what a great conversation, guys! It's been 90 minutes of talking.
I kind
of
wish
music.
We could keep talking.
We have to do a part two. Part two.
We didn't even scratch the surface here. There's so many things. We didn't even answer the basic question that we started with. What, chicken or the egg here?
And just so you know, it's 2:00 in the morning, and if we wanted to do a part two for another 2 hours, we could do it easily. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Right on.
Merry Christmas.
We're definitely going to have to do a part two of this amazing discussion with Seth and Sammy. There's too much that we didn't get to, but that is the power of music with Seth and Sammy. Thanks again to those guys for taking the time to school us on their own musical likes and stories. And thanks to all you guys for listening to this show and all the great shows on the Jericho Network, including the new one, the new Bell of the Ball, Beyond the Darkness, the latest addition to the Jericho Network. Episode 1 is a hit, baby. You guys are going to love the stories about the Black Eyed Kids, the investigation into whether the phenomenon may be tied to demon possession. Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis are going to bring all kinds of creepy paranormal investigation stories and experiences to you every Monday. They were just on Talk Is Jericho earlier this week, last week actually, and what a crazy, the Bloody Bones Man, Slender People, Black Eyed Kids, Pepe the Lake Monster, possessions, exorcisms. You want all that paranormal craziness? You got to check it out every Monday on the Beyond the Darkness podcast here on the Jericho Network. All right, we got the Black Eyed Kids, but this time we're also investigating whether or not there might be alien life forms. That's happening this Monday. Go to iTunes, hit subscribe on Beyond the Darkness, check it out now, and scare the poop out of yourself. And go ahead, subscribe and stars to all the Jericho Network shows. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus every Tuesday this week. They're having an in-depth discussion on whether comedy and wrestling is a smart thing or not. Keeping it 100 with Conan this week. They have Dave Meltzer. They got
Mr. 450 Hammett is on there. Chael Sonnen is on there. Plus Disco Inferno versus Cyrus is heating up. It's going to get crazy. Then we got the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday. Hilarious show. Mundy, Gage, and Truly just babbling on about all things pop culture. So thank you for joining us, and thanks for using my Amazon links for all your holiday shopping. You still got a couple days left to buy some last minute Christmas presents. Well, literally one day left. If you have Amazon Prime, you can probably get it overnight, but it's the easiest way to support the show for after Christmas and for the new year. It's taking some of the stress out of your Boxing Day shopping, your after Christmas shopping. I did all my shopping on Amazon, and guess what? Amazon made it so easy and hassle-free that I'm done. All right, I'm finished all my Christmas shopping. If you want to continue having the greatest deals and the easiest way to shop, just go to my Amazon links at podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got them links for USA, UK, Canada. Every time you use the Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage of the show to help us cover production costs. There's no hidden fees, extra charges. Just go to podcast1.com, click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You also find all my other great sponsors there as well. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 25% off all merch and swag. And if you buy a max pack or a combo, you get a second one for 50% off the price that was already 25% off. All right? That's pretty crazy. Pure de Or, get an extra $20 off when you order at 2minuteclub.com/Jericho. Get that hair back luxurious and full once again. Then there's CISO.com. Laugh your collective rear ends off. Use the promo code PODCAST1 to get 2 free months of the funniest website on the entire net. And don't forget, March 15th, 2017, he's putting me in a cage. He's the bane of my existence, but Mick Foley will be on Talk is Jericho. 79 days and counting until the biggest podcast ever. You're going to love that one. I'm excited for you to hear it. And thank you for hearing today. Thank you for listening today. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And next Wednesday, She's My Cherry Pie. That's right. Bobby Brown is going to be here. Check out the cherry pie video from Warren. She's one of the most famous models from the 90s and 2000, a cool rock chick. Bobby Brown is going to be here. She's hot. She's funny. She's going to be here. She's your after Christmas gift. Merry Christmas to you guys. Have a great weekend. Have a great Christmas. Hug your loved ones. Enjoy your presents. Eat lots of food. Don't drink and drive. And have a safe, safe holiday. Peace, love, and hugs. And a big, yeah, boy, Merry Christmas.
If you've ever asked me for something illegal, you're in the right place.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
There's a common misbelief today that to make it further, you need to push yourself, that you need to give up any joy to continue with your rigid routine. Or you could try another way. Take some time to enjoy life, like having a Michelob Ultra with friends. Because happiness is essential to living an exceptional life. Michelob Ultra, a refreshing and balanced flavor with only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Enjoy responsibly. Anheuser-Busch, Michelob Ultra Light Beer, St. Louis, Missouri.
You know when you see a great deal on a phone and then you find out it's not for you? Not at Verizon.
They just gave us all a new iPhone 13.
So we both got the same great deal.
Yep.
Get iPhone 13 on us with select trade-in and 5G unlimited plans for every customer, current, new, everyone, to show the love. Only from Verizon. $799.99, 128 gigabytes only, device payment purchase with new or upgrade smartphone line required. Less up to $800 trade-in/promo credit applied over 36 months. 0% APR. Trade-in conditions apply.